A Chicago suburb is voting today on whether or not to enact reparations to the tune of $25,000 for every qualifying Black resident. Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. This is the Trish Intel Show. And this affluent Chicago suburb out in Evanston, Illinois, is deciding whether or not they're going to give $25,000 to each qualifying Black resident as a kind of reparation. This would basically be the first reparations given out in U.S. history. And a lot of activists are saying, like, look, this could serve as a model for the federal government. So basically, the goal is to help address housing inequities in the city between 1919 and 1969. And so, in other words, if you had lived in Evanston, Illinois during those times, or if you had a relative, any relative that lived in Evanston, Illinois during those times, then you now qualify. Of course, you have to be Black. Qualify for $25,000 each, every resident, $25,000. The money can be used towards housing in the form of a mortgage or in the form of home renovations. Whatever it is, it has to go towards housing because they're trying to address this housing inequity issue. Because apparently, between 1919 and 1969, the way the rules were in the city, they discriminated against Blacks in terms of housing. It was both the local government, they say, in Evanston, Illinois, as well as the banks that prevented Black residents from owning housing in the better neighborhoods. So they're coming up with this idea to make up for it all. And interestingly enough, they chose a tax on marijuana to pay for it all. 3% tax on marijuana sales in the community. Apparently Evanston doesn't have that many African Americans because they're actually looking at only doling out $400,000, at least in year one. Again, this would go to anybody that's African-American that had a relative living in Evanston between 1919 and 1969 and now lives there today. Michael Neighbors, he's the president of the Evanston NAACP. He told Newsweek, you know what? It's just a drop in the bucket. When it's all said and done, I'm quoting here, he said, however much money is raised for reparations will only be a drop in the bucket for the oppression that Black people experienced in this nation. And then there's another woman who's a local lawmaker, and she's quoted as saying, we are fully, quote, aware that this initiative is not full repair to Black residents. That's going to take an initiative at every level of government, throughout big business, and in all institutions. And then she goes on to say it's going to take the passage of H.R. 40 as well. This is her talking to Newsweek. Robin Rue Simmons is her name. H-40, of course, is the legislation that was introduced in the U.S. Congress by Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat out of Texas, in order to study the issue of reparations. And so this woman in Evanston is going on saying, look, you know, we need to do this. We need to do this because this is the only way that we can really try and make things right. And the federal government has to step up to make things right. Meanwhile, I want to share with you something that crossed my desk, a Bloomberg email. And in this email, Bloomberg shares their look, a nice, lovely graphic of the wealth gap. They say that Black Americans have about 1/7 the wealth of whites. And basically, there's like this $3 trillion wealth gap that they're pointing to today. But what struck me is really interesting was that they were saying, well, this is because of slavery, right? So, of course, you need reparations to deal with it all. But what really got me was this graphic that they included only showed things from 1967 through 2019. Now, when you look at that, they're pointing out, you know what? The gap was only 1/5 as big as it is now in 1967. So what was so magical about 67? Why did that wealth gap grow and grow and grow after 67? I got the answer for you next. Okay, so now Bloomberg is highlighting this wealth disparity between Blacks and whites and saying, you know, it's all because of slavery. But they show this chart in an email that goes all the way back to 1967. So I started thinking, what was it about 67? Well, you know what we had in 64? We had Johnson's War on Poverty. And by 67, those policies had kicked in. And by 67, they started to take their toll on the poorest Americans, including many Black Americans and many white Americans for that matter as well. Poor Americans suffered because a lousy, stupid, ill-thought-out policy. And you know what? We're doing it all over again. But anyway, let me talk about what happened in 64. Do you know back in 1964, only 8% of babies were born to single mothers in the United States? Now, listen, this doesn't have to be like a, this is not a gender thing, a race thing. This is just a family thing, okay? Typically, kids do better. I'm not saying it's every single time, but typically kids do better in households with a mother and a father, right? Because you know what? It's hard work raising kids. It's really not that easy. And when you put it on one single person, just on the mother, it becomes really difficult. And that's when that cycle of poverty starts to kick in. Well, that's what happened, thanks to Lyndon Johnson and his war on poverty, that basically said you can't have a man in the house if you're going to get a handout from Uncle Sam. So you're better off, what, being married to the government as opposed to being married to an individual that you're going to share your life with and build some wealth with. Study after study after study has shown that husbands and wives that build lives together, that save money together, that raise families together, typically are better off from a wealth perspective. All right, now I hate to break it to them, but that's just reality. And when you take away the incentives for families to stay together, when you take away the incentives for people to work, you create a cycle of poverty that is very, very hard to break. And so, yes, it had a really bad effect on African Americans. But you know what? I look what's happening right now. I look at coronavirus and the dumb, stupid policies that our government has enacted as a result of it, with all these lockdowns and all these shutdowns. And you know what? Women, who are usually the prime caregivers of children, are having a hard time going to work when the schools are all shut down. And interestingly enough, they're more likely to be shut down in communities that are predominantly African American. So, you know, you guys tell me, you're all out there championing equality, championing, you know, this wealth issue for Black Americans, but you over and over and over again put in place the worst policies for all of these people, women included, by the way. You're all about equality for women in the workplace, and yet you keep all the schools closed. And hey, guess what? What do you know? Imagine that. Women are more likely to be unemployed in this environment. I say this over and over again because it's not actually that hard. And yet the left continually screws it up over and over and over. And this is what Biden's doing right now. And Kamala Harris and the rest of them, they're screwing it up once again with lousy tax policy that's going to cost every single American. I call it the Great American Tax Hike, the biggest since 1993. You couple that with all this spending, and we have got a scenario that is, well, I'll just quote the former Treasury Secretary from Bill Clinton here, the worst in 40 years. Uh-huh. That's what Larry Summers is saying. Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, the former head of the National Economic Council under Barack Obama, and former economist at the World Bank. Even he knows how dumb this all is. He's saying it's the worst in 40 years, and he gives it a 1 in 3 chance of actually working. He calls it the most irresponsible he's seen. Okay, we're going to talk about that. Plus the border. Talking about, again, bad policy. Look what's happening at the border. 15,000 kids now in federal custody as a result of some bad decisions by some rather inept lawmakers. I'm on it next. And to hear the latest, the crisis is so bad at the border, the crisis that they won't call a crisis, that in order to deal with this overflow of migrants, the Biden administration is reportedly allowing asylum seekers to depart custody into the United States without ever scheduling a date for a court hearing. It's some kind of honor code system that the Biden administration is allegedly permitting. This is according to a report out of Fox, where they're saying that border agents at the Grand Valley sector, quote, have begun to process and release illegal border crossers who claim asylum without issuing a notice to appear, allowing them to depart custody without scheduling a court date for a hearing. Wow. This is Trump's fault, though, says Alejandro Mayorkas. He's the head of the Department of Homeland Security. He said that the border crossings were the highest in 20 years, but he's blaming the Trump administration for the influx. I mean, forget about the fact that the Biden administration signaled that the U.S. would be willing to take illegal border crossers into the country. Forget about the fact that Nancy Pelosi and company just passed that big Dreamers bill in Congress. I mean, that wouldn't have anything to do with it now, would it? Look, the conditions, sadly, at the Southwest border are really bad right now. We have never seen anything like this. To quote Alejandro Mayorkas, we have not seen anything like this in 20 years. We have nearly 15,000 children right now in federal custody. It is so bad that the Department of Homeland Security is now looking for volunteers to help address this crisis. And on Friday, it was reported that federal authorities were so concerned about the recent overflow. They'd had more than 1,000 come in the morning. They had 1,000 that were still due for processing. And so then they were apparently requesting planes to fly migrants to northern states so that they could be processed at the Canadian border. It seems only fair, right? I mean, why is Texas having to deal with the brunt of this? Might as well spread the pain. Look, this is not going to work. This is actually a crisis, whether they want to admit it or not. And they need to come up with a solution, because you cannot just open things up with no kind of system in place. And I say this as somebody who, by the way, comes from a family of immigrants and believes in immigrants being very much a part of our strength and our nation. And yet, what are they doing here? What are they doing with kids alone, no parents, just being sent to the border where they're now in federal custody? I mean, there's got to be a better way. There have got to be some smarter people in the room. And yet somehow, I doubt it. I doubt it, because when I look at this really dumb, really stupid tax hike, I know there's not too many smart people there. You know who else knows that? The former Treasury Secretary of the United States of America under Bill Clinton, nonetheless. I'm going to share that with you next. Will this market ever stop moving higher? It's debatable right now. Look, the reality is the Fed is there. The Fed is ready, willing, and able. And you've got not just Jerome Powell, you got Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And they all want to give out a little something, anyone they possibly can that they think deserves it. So all of this is creating what Larry Summers, who served as the head of the National Economic Council under President Obama, who was the Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, what this is creating is, quote, the least responsible fiscal macroeconomic policy we've had for the last 40 years. Well, tell us how you really feel. He went on to say that the U.S. will face a, quote, pretty dramatic fiscal monetary collision. What is kindling, Larry Summers said, is now igniting. And it's because the Fed is stuck in this loose monetary policy mode, and you've got a federal government that's just giving out money. I mean, that is a recipe, let's be very clear, for disaster. He's right. It is the least responsible, the most irresponsible in 40 years. He worries, and he's correct to worry, that there's a 1 in 3 chance that inflation will accelerate in the coming years and the U.S. could face stagflation. Why would that be? Well, how's your economy really going to continue growing when you don't have the $1,400 to hand out next month? And you don't have the, you know, billions of dollars to give to the states. What's going to happen then? Well, you're going to start to see a recessionary environment, and you've got nothing left at that point. So you run the risk for sure of not actually creating any inflation, but having stagflations. Hello, 1970s all over again. Get your disco pants out. He also said that we could run the risk of no inflation because the Fed would hit the brakes so hard once we started to see it that they would push the economy into recession. So those are the two big risks out there. The final possibility, this would be the good news, right, is that it actually all works out, that the Fed and the Treasury would actually get both rapid growth and get that growth without inflation, which would be great. But that's a 1 in 3 chance, 2 in 3 chance that you have these other things. And so he's just saying that there are, quote, more risks. This is in an interview, by the way, with Bloomberg Television. More risks at this moment that macroeconomic policy will cause grave risks than I can remember. You know, he's taken a lot of heat for this, because he came out with an op-ed in the Washington Post about a month or two ago, basically warning against exactly all of this and saying, look, you know, you're putting a wartime stimulus effort into the economy at a time when we're no longer at war, right? Like, we haven't seen anything like this since World War II. And if you said to yourself, okay, we're at war with the virus, the good news is the war's coming to an end. And guess what? We've won, right? We got all these vaccines out there. So why are you putting so much money in now? And what kind of effect is that going to have? Look, I would say to everyone that's listening, the reality is in the here and now, the markets have nowhere to go but up because you have all this support, both federal policy and fiscal, so monetary and fiscal policy working together to support these markets. But at some point, if we don't actually get real growth out of this, if we don't emerge from this more intact, healthier, and better than ever before, and I don't think we will, given the tax hike Joe Biden's talking about, well, then you're going to have a problem. And that's when you start to see these asset bubbles burst. I mean, I don't think it's any question right now that we're in an asset bubble. I mean, when have we traded like this? We've never traded it at 30 times plus 30 times earnings, right? So this is an asset bubble, and we've got to kind of grow into this bubble or the bubble bursts. And so we better hope this thing works. But Larry Summers is right. It's irresponsible of our government to be doing this right now. We don't need the stimulus right now. I know it feels good. It's great to get a $1,400 check, right? Lots of Americans love that. But again, if you don't have a plan to actually get the economy back up and running, if you don't have a plan to open schools and get factories back open and Disney, I mean, finally, California's coming around on Disney, right? Things like Disney back open, then you don't really have an economy to go back to. And so this could be a massive stumbling block. I really hope they get it right. But like I said, I don't have a lot of faith in this administration. And poor Joe Biden, by the way, fallen up the stairs. You know, I'm actually willing to forgive that. What I'm not willing to forgive is lousy policy that's going to affect us for generations. Make sure you go to trishintel.com. Make sure you download this podcast. Make sure you go to my Facebook page. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, on YouTube. I'm everywhere now. It's great to have you listening, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Thanks so much.